following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Tuesday, July 23rd, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. We are 39 days away from the start of Auburn football. It's crazy, I know, but the countdown is on. It started at, 150, then you get to 100, then you get to 50, and after SEC Media Days, it just seems like it could be tomorrow. So we'll have football talk coming up later in hour number two. But I told you yesterday I had to get confirmation. Just wanted to make sure. And I did. And we got a guy back in the studio on this Tuesday afternoon. Lindsey Crosby joining us in our baseball power hour. We've been doing this every week for a long time, my man. Good to see you. Glad that you made it to and from Dallas safely, my man.
Same to you. We all traveled right before travel became impossible.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we drove, so the only complication we had was the time.
Gross.
You know, the drive is not bad, right? It's not horrible. You get over on the other side of Alabama, and you hop on I-20, and you just ride it until you get to Dallas. I mean, it is just straight, my man. But given what has happened in the airline industry the last, I don't know, month and a half, 2 months, mm-hmm. I think I'm cool. I think I'm good to drive everywhere for now.
Yeah, it's not been good, and I'm thankful that solo traveler, I flew in, flew out. But I don't have any trips planned for a while, and I'm not going to because of that reason. Just give them some time to figure everything out. I'll get back to it later. But Dallas was good, though. The MLB puts on a great event. They were super hospitable. Mm-hmm. We were at the Futures game. We went to a minor league game on Friday night in the suite. We were at the draft. It was great time.
That's awesome. Was that your first time attending the draft?
That was, yes.
How was that?
You can't actually do or see a lot in the room. It's probably honestly not worth going to.
So it's probably not like the NFL draft where it's a massive outside event now.
No, it was indoors. They did have some players there, right, mm-hmm. to get drafted. But a lot of it is, it's not like it, like NFL, most people aren't there. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's funny because I had a Zoom with the Braves director of amateur scouting. He was available to the media after the pick was made and everything. And it's like, got to find a quiet place to do this.
Yeah.
we're in this auditorium as they're announcing more picks and things like that. And when we actually talked to the player, Cam Caminiti, the prep lefty out of Arizona, he was also at the draft. He was in one of the back rooms. It's a locker room. There's mm-hmm. a metal locker behind him, and he's like on a laptop talking to us. And it's mm-hmm. like, well, you know, this probably in retrospect, like I don't need to be at the draft next year. I can just be at home.
That's fair. I mean, but
the Futures game was great.
Yeah, the Futures game was great. And now, I mean, you can say, hey, I've at least been to the draft once in my lifetime.
I've got the media credentials. That's the fun. That's the big thing there. Added to the collection. Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
Winter meetings, you know, all this kind of stuff. Spring training, regular season.
Nice.
Draft. Just kind of collect them all.
Well, good for you, man. Glad you got to go to that, and glad that it was, it sounds like it was at least worth the time, worth the trip. Mm-hmm. And it's always good to get out of town for a few days. And so, man, we got a ton to catch up on. Yep. We got to talk about the All-Star game, kind of talk about a recap All-Star weekend, and then All-Star weekend, whatever you want to call it. I know it gets into the actual week itself. And then the Braves are off to a horrible start outside of the All-Star
it's
break.
It's not great.
No, it's not great. It's not all great. So we're going to get to that as well, plus some other Major League storylines throughout this first hour. So if you've been with us throughout a while. You know that this is our baseball power hour. We do this at least once a week throughout baseball season. Lindsey Crosby joins us in the studio. Plug, promote everything you got. Tell people where they can find you. Tell people why they should listen to you talk about baseball for the next hour.
Okay, so I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. It's kind of the hub of everything, right? The majority of my content, the Atlanta Braves, bravestoday.com, and then Auburn Baseball, auburndaily.com. But national writer for Athlon Sports, we do have 8 different teams. So athlonsports.com, you can go see the MLB writing there. It is, I mean, tons of stuff there. And then still not convinced people should listen to me, but I am told that I know ball. So let's go with that. I did not nominated this year. They haven't yet released those yet. But last year I did win an award for the sports writing for prospect and minor, prospect minors and college writer of the year. So that was kind of cool from the IBWAA. That was kind of cool.
Hang the banner, man. The banner.
They have not yet done the nominations for this year. So I am technically still the reigning award winner.
Yeah, you are.
We'll take it.
Hey, man, if they just quit giving out awards for that, you could be the last one. You could be the one if they decide to do that. But
you know who the, I believe the last National League Silver Slugger at pitcher is?
No.
Max Fried. And now that they have the DH, he will always be the last one.
How about that? See, you could go in the same category and same type of category as Max Fried. Is that where you want to be?
That is, well, I want to be healthy. Right now he's not.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of guys that are not healthy in terms of the Atlanta Braves, and that's where we start today because coming out of the All-Star break, right, Atlanta was, they were hanging in there, they're right around, you know, they're a playoff team, they're trying to make a push to catch up to Philly, and coming out of the All-Star break, every team has the same mindset. It's like, okay, time to reset, time to go. There's a couple of teams that don't care about the season anymore and they give up. But most teams, like the Atlanta Braves, it's the second half, a little bit less than the second half, but it's time to go, right? Playoffs are right around the corner. Let's get up and let's get after it. And the Braves fell flat on their face because they've had guys go injured and go out injured left and right.
Yeah, the Braves lost 2 players on Sunday. So we woke up to the news that Max Fried was going on the injured list with left elbow neuritis. It sounds terrifying. It is inflammation of a nerve in the elbow. So long story short, he felt some soreness in his elbow doing warm-ups for the All-Star game. He was doing the arm circles, and he felt some discomfort in his elbow. He pitched anyway, and apparently people are mad about that, but pitchers feel discomfort all the time.
Sure.
Like, it is a natural thing to feel to not feel good when you have to pitch.
I was about to say, I don't think any of them feel good.
None of them feel good, no. But it didn't go away. And so when he reported back to the team on Friday morning, because they were off for the All-Star break, reported back on Friday morning, he told the team, they did MRIs, things like that. They said, okay, it's inflammation. We're going to shut you down until it goes away. So he is on the IL for indefinite period. I did a deep dive on Twitter about this. There's not been a ton of cases of this. Every year, there's no more than 2 IL placements for this going back to 2018. This is the only year we've had 3. And of those, some of them clear up in a month, some of them are 3. Last year, the 2 guys, it was 32 days and 93 days. 2021, it was a guy who was out for the entire season, and it was a guy who was out for 31 days. Like, there's no way to know how long this will take.
Is that depending? I mean, a lot of it, of course, with any injury depends on the body and the person, but I'm sure the rehab has a lot to do with that, too.
It's just nerves are a big unknown. We don't know, right? Everybody's nerves react differently.
Yeah, they're all different. Yeah.
And the other caveat there is the IL tracker does not specify which. Like, if it was elbow neuritis, carpal tunnel neuritis, like, shoulder, it doesn't specify, so some of them could have been different body parts. I don't know that.
Why would you not specify?
I'm amazed they specify as much as they do. NHL is still, like, upper body, lower body, right? Like, yeah. At least baseball gives you a definitive, this is what it is.
Fair.
But, yeah, so they're going to shut him down for a while. We'll see whenever he's healthy. And then Ozzie Albies, in the 9th inning, breaks his wrist. He was attempting to make a play on a base stealer. Mike Ciani was stealing second base in the 9th inning. He went to make the catch. The throw was up towards the first base side. So he goes out to get it, and his hand and wrist comes down on Ciani's shoulder. And the motion pulls his wrist back towards his, you know, like towards his forearm, right?
Yeah.
And
the way it bent it the way it's not supposed to go.
It bent it the wrong direction, yes. Glove comes off immediately. He's in pain.
He's shaking, visibly.
Fractured wrist. He's out for 8 weeks. So the Braves called up one of their 2 top position player prospects, Nacho Alvarez. stuck him in the lineup, playing second base last night. He's playing third base tonight because Austin Riley is on paternity leave. So congrats on the new baby.
Yeah, Austin congrats Riley. To him. At least it's not an injury.
Yeah, it's thankfully. He did miss a month with an injury earlier in the year.
Yeah,
but
true. Well, what do you think about old Nacho? What do you think? That's such an awesome name, by the way. That is so awesome. I love that so much.
I mean, his legal name is Ignacio, but everybody when he was a kid apparently said that wrong. So he just went with Nacho.
Ignacio, Nacho.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, kids, but anyway. Kids are weird. I get it.
Yeah, but no, really promising prospect. He's a shortstop naturally, but he's playing second base because Orlando Arce has had good defense there. He can play third. He's played third as well. He's doing that tonight. The range isn't amazing, right? Like, he's got decent range, but not great range, but really good instincts and action. So he makes it work. Offensively, he didn't have a ton of power at Mississippi in Double A, but at the same time, that's also the hardest ballpark to hit for power in the entire in all of the minor leagues, right? Mm-hmm. Like the park factors, it is the worst ballpark for homer production in all of minor league baseball.
Just the way it's shaped, 100,
the dimensions, and then the placement of that off of the water. And where the wind blows and stuff.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So 120 teams, it's the worst. Last season, they're using it. They'll be in Columbus next year. But when he got to AAA, he kind of exploded from a power perspective. He also made an adjustment to his hands. I think on base-wise, batting average-wise, he's going to be good. He's not going to steal a ton of bags. He's going to give you good defense. He's going to be, at best, above average. But that's all you need. I mean, even if he's your starting shortstop next year, he's probably in that lineup, probably batting 8th or 9th.
Yeah.
I think he's perfectly fine in that role, and he will be perfectly fine going forward. The question is going to be his adjustment to major league pitching. He was in Double A a month ago. Like, he has like 20-something games in Triple A. So the adjustment from Double A to the majors is huge. So how well can he adjust? But he's the best option they have. They have him. They signed Whit Merrifield. Who immediately got hurt. Didn't even get into a game yet.
I saw that.
And got hurt. Took a ground ball off the throwing hand during warm-ups yesterday. So, more injury stuff here. I mean,
is that just bad luck, Lindsay? Is it really just bad? Can you chalk it up to just bad luck for the Atlanta Braves who, I mean, can't get out of their own way? It's been since April. I mean, since the beginning of the year, this has been happening to Atlanta. And look, it's sports. Injuries happen. It's baseball. Weird things happen. But, man, the Braves have been cursed for so long, it seems like. Even in the World Series year, they had problems with this, too. They were able to overcome it. But, man, this is a lot for a team to overcome.
Yeah, it really does feel like this is kind of out of the ordinary as far as injuries. And if you look at last season, they were remarkably healthy. Right. So of your everyday position players last year, none of your 9 in your starting lineup, the longest injury absence was 29 days. Michael Harris missed 3 weeks. Travis d'Arnaud missed 29 days. Orlando Arcia missed like 23 days. Mm-hmm. Ozzie Albies missed 2 weeks. Everybody else was healthy all year. Now, pitching wise, you had guys just like always, but even those guys that were injured outside of Max Fried weren't huge guys. It was Yonny Chirinos was hurt. Okay. That's sure. Colin McHugh was hurt. Okay, he retired after the year. I mean, you didn't have any super serious injuries, whereas this year, everybody in your starting lineup, with the exception of Marcell Ozuna, Jared Kelnick, and Matt Olson, has been on the injured list or has missed time with injury because Austin Riley was hurt and didn't actually go on the IL. So, like, I mean, Albies, this is his second stint. Murphy missed almost 2 months. Ronald's missed 58 days and counting. Michael Harris has been out for 40 days and counting. And then Spencer Strider, obviously. You lost AJ Smith-Shawver. You lost AJ Minter. It's just, it's been a lot of stuff here. Yeah. And some of this is regression back to the mean. Last year, you were pretty lucky when it came to who got hurt. Some of it's just a little bit of bad luck, a little bit of regression. And yeah. You have to hope, like, there's nothing Atlanta's doing wrong to make this happen, that this is just kind of fluky. And hopefully next year you'll have better health look. Because that's an underspoken part of sports is, like, who is healthy versus who is not healthy. You see it in the NFL all the time.
Yeah. Right? I was going to bring up football. I mean, you see football a lot of times, right? The conversations of, okay, if this quarterback can stay healthy, they're going to be really good, right? I mean, and that's what I was going to say, too, is when you see this type of thing happen in football, which is obviously a much more physical sport, when you continue to see guys, you know, pulling muscles and breaking bones and going down with similar injuries, if it continues to happen over and over again, people begin to start calling out the training staff and the head trainer and things like that, because I think that is a legitimate concern at times. But I don't know. Baseball is not really that way. And take Ozzy, for example. I mean, he was just trying to make a play at second base, and a bad throw caused him to break his wrist. Like, how do you prevent that?
Yeah, that's the issue with, like, Ozzy's injuries, is so many of them are fluky, right? Like, so many of them are, I think, last year twice he went on the IL because he got hit by a pitch. Like, that's not something you can really correct. Now, he did have a hamstring issue. Like, that's, again, that's kind of bad luck. But, like, the broken finger in 22, the broken foot in 22, the knee injury in 21, the toe injury this April, like, all of that was being hit by a pitch.
Yeah.
This was, he went to field the ball and his glove and his wrist hit a runner, like, because the throw was off. I mean, it's kind of fluky. It's kind of bad luck. The things that I would specifically question if they happened a lot would be as if you saw the same type of soft tissue injury happen to multiple players.
Okay.
So, like, hamstring issue. Michael Harris had a hamstring pull. First one he's ever had. Like, his words. First one he's ever had in his career happened this year. Okay. That's not really, I'm not too worried about that. Sean Murphy, oblique. Okay, first one of those he's ever had. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not.
But if those start to stack up, right?
If all of a sudden four or five guys have obliques, I'm going to be like, okay, are we doing too much in batting practice? Are we not doing enough stretching, enough preventive drills to stop that from happening?
Right.
But one guy having it, like, that's the thing. It's all been different things.
Yeah, and again, there's nothing you can do to prevent so many of those awkward injuries, which happen so much in baseball. Before we get to break, with Ozzy, and I saw this and you said it too, 8 weeks is the timetable for him. Realistically, right, if the Braves are playoff bound and begin to make a little bit of a run, what is this? This is July 23rd, so that would be, what, August, September? So he could be back for a postseason run if everything goes right.
Yes, yes. The goal would be get him out on a rehab stint before the minor league season ended. That's going to be the tough part, is because when that ends, you don't have a place to send a guy for a rehab assignment.
What's the difference in seasons ending right there? Not to put you on the spot. But
I believe it is around middle September. So if he has
so there's
setback,
a few weeks of buffer.
There's a few weeks where you do not have minor league games, but you have major league games. And every level ends this the week before the next one does.
Got you. Okay. So I've never thought about that.
That's why, like, for instance, Hurston Waldrop, the first-round pick of the Braves last year, he made his final start in AAA last year, but he started this year in AA, and it's because they wanted him to be in AA, but AA season ended last year.
How about that?
And he had to make another start, so they pushed him to AAA for that start, and then he went back to AA because of that. So
interesting.
I'm trying to get the exact date. It looks like the last game is an away game on the 22nd of September, so a little over a week between when the AAA season ends and when the major league season ends, which I believe is the 30th.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But if you get him out, and they're on the road for that too. So if you get him into rehab the third week of September, he's on the road in Jacksonville to rehab.
Mm-hmm.
So ideally they want to get him at home the week before so that they can activate him as soon as he's ready. He has a week or two to play before you get into the postseason.
Braves got to find a way to overcome some of these injury problems. We'll talk about the Braves that are still healthy and what the Braves are doing moving forward, plus get into some all-star stuff because, man, there was a lot happening last week over in Arlington. All that coming up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We continue on with our Baseball Power Hour here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goins, joined by Lindsey Crosby in the studio. And I believe we got most of the injury conversation out of the way, at least the depressing parts of the Atlanta Braves. But there is one more depressing part that I think you at least want to bring up. For a guy that look, we were talking before the show. There's no reason that this guy should be this bad. Okay, he's a good-looking player. He has the physical attributes to be good, and you would think he's got the mental attributes to be good as well. But my God, the numbers are just atrocious for this guy.
Yeah, I don't know what is going on with Matt Olson. He has played 557 consecutive games. It is the longest streak in the majors, second longest streak since 2000. But if there's ever a dude that needed a day off, it feels like it's Matt Olson.
This man desperately needs a day
off. So first,
557 straight games.
Yes.
That's absurd.
So first, full season. Here we go. 220 batting average with a 389 slugging. I'll remind everybody, he led baseball last year with a slugging of 619. So it has fallen. I'm sorry, 604. So it has fallen by over 200 points from last year. But, it gets worse.
Oh, boy.
The last 30 games that he has played, which, by the way, Atlanta is barely over 500, 16-14 in those 30 games. He's batting 126 with an OPS of 395. Not a slugging 395.
OPS.
Yes. His on-base is 197. His slugging is 198. He has the same number of extra base hits, two doubles and two home runs, as he does times that he has grounded into double plays.
God.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
What is happening?
He has been hit by as many pitches as he has put in the seats. Two hit by pitch, two homers in that 30 days.
Oh, look, I know it's bad, but I didn't know it was that bad. You're a lot better with the numbers than I am in terms of this. And look, you watch Braves every day, every single game. I don't get to watch them as much. Can you see anything like visibly when you watch him at the plate that is a sign of like, dude, you got to get this fixed?
So one of my guys did a deep dive on Braves today. I sent him some stuff that I saw, and so he went ahead and wrote it up. And from what I can tell, last year he had an issue with fastballs. And specifically, it was something where he had an issue right now he's missing center cut fastballs. It is the most frustrating strikeout you have ever seen. And
it's a straight up swing and miss.
Yeah.
I mean,
but last year, to start the year, he struggled with elevated fastballs, fastballs up in the zone. And I think we've talked before about how the new trend with fastballs up in the zone is getting as much backspin as possible.
Yeah.
So it doesn't want to drop like you instinctively think it would because of gravity. And so he made a intentional adjustment last year to swing higher than he thought he needed to on a elevated fastball.
Okay.
Because he was swinging under it because they were staying up, right?
Got you.
So now, because of that, he started to struggle a little bit with sliders down in the zone because he's already trying to swing up. Mm-hmm. That pitch is moving down away from you, right? This year, pitchers have started to take those same fastballs and throw them down in the zone. So he's getting a lot of fastballs in the bottom parts of the zone, and he's not catching up to those because they don't stay up like the ones at the top of the zone do. When you intentionally throw it lower, it flies a little bit differently.
So he's just not adjusting to the lower fastballs.
And then not only that, but then when he does start to hunt that low fastball, they throw low sliders.
God.
And it's just,
they're just making him look silly, man.
He is just one step behind the scouting report. And that's the big thing that's different now in baseball than it was even 5 years ago. Like, talking to these hitters, there's so much data.
Yeah.
Like, if I can pull this data on these guys, there's no way that major league teams don't have multiple people whose only job it is to tell you, here's how you attack Matt Olson. Here's how you attack Austin Riley. Here's how you attack Ronald Acuña Jr.
Yeah.
And they've discussed, like, even the prospects, when they come up, there's already scouting reports on them. Because there's stat cast in AAA. I can pull right now the average exit velocities and launch angles for Ignacio Alvarez in AAA.
Mm-hmm.
They're throwing him more fastballs, they're throwing him down instead of up, and then they're throwing more sliders at the right time to take advantage of when he's trying to adjust to those. It's become
such a numbers game.
It's become so just, optimized within an inch of its life.
Right.
That's where it is right now. And he is not, he is struggling to make the adjustments he needs to make.
Yeah, he's got to find a way to get out of that, man. Hey, Braves, can we get this guy a day off? I mean, can we send him to the beach for a few days or something? This guy needs a break, man.
He didn't go to the All-Star game. He just had 4 days off.
You'd think that would have fixed it. Maybe he needs longer. Who knows? Maybe. Well, we'll talk more Braves. We'll talk more Major League Baseball. See if we get any Auburn baseball updates as well. We're 30 minutes into hour number one, our Baseball Power Hour here on ESPN 106.7.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. We got Lindsey Crosby in the studio for 30 more minutes for our Baseball Power Hour. And if you have questions or want to get in on the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's the phone line number. You can call in, be a part of the show, 334-321-1390 to be on the line. Or you can just shoot me a text at 334-784-1067 in the On the Line text box. All right, you can get your questions or comments in at the text box as well, 334-784-1067. And let's loop in Auburn talk with Major League Baseball talk since the draft was just a little over a week ago. And Auburn saw a couple of guys get taken, and so the roster's shaken up a little bit. But Auburn's got some more representation now in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, so Auburn sent three players in the draft to MLB and then had two more signed free agent deals. So of your draft picks, Chase Alsup, starter, went in the fourth round to the Orioles, pick number 127. He actually is now joining Trace Bright from 2022.
Ah, yeah, that's right. There,
that is now two top five round picks that the Orioles have made of Auburn pitching, right? So they took him. Tanner Bowman went to the Yankees in the ninth round. Well, it's good for him because the Yankees are an organization that are known to be pretty good at developing pitching. He's a fastball slider guy. They're really big into giving their guys either that sweepy slider or a cutter. And so I'm curious to see what they do for his third pitch, because you probably want to give him a third pitch just to see if he can make it as a starter. And then Will Cannon in the 12th round to the Reds. And I really do like what they have done with some of their relief guys. Zach Maxwell's somebody for me that interesting underperformance, I feel like, in college over what he could have been. And then they got him and they made him into a better pitcher. I'm curious to see what they can do with Will Cannon. And then you had Cooper Weiss signed with the Padres. You know, you had a couple like free agent deals like that. And then you had some recruits drafted. And I believe they are all coming to Auburn.
There's a couple of big announcements on this.
Yes. So Connor Gatwood, the right-handed pitcher, was taken the 19th round by the Angels. It was always going to be tough for them to sign him because they did take a prep player in the 11th round. And so it was going to be questionable whether they could afford both of them. Gatwood came out a day or two later and reconfirmed he is coming to campus. So it was obvious they could not afford both those guys. The Blue Jays took three preps in the back half of the draft, one of those being Auburn outfielder Damarian Terrell of Thompson. And then Chase Frelick, the catcher, went to the Padres. And I believe all three of them are coming to Auburn.
Okay.
So Auburn avoids losing recruits to MLB, which is always a great thing.
Sure.
And then Cooper McMurray also said he was coming back to Auburn as well. So you've got, you brought in some big transfers. You kept some pieces that you could have lost. You did lose Chris Stanfield, but you kept Cooper McMurray, who could have gone pro if he wanted, but he confirmed the day before the draft that he was staying in Auburn. And then you kept most of your recruits. So you feel good about that.
Out of the guys from Auburn that got drafted, the recruits that got drafted, guys that got signed, all of those guys that you just talked about, before I give you my thoughts, any surprises there? Anything that kind of shocked you in terms of where they went in the draft or the team they went to or anything like that? Anything kind of surprised you there?
I think I'm surprised that Cooper Weiss was an undrafted free agent. I felt like not having any leverage as a senior sign, he could have been one of those guys that was taken because he showed good defense. He showed some speed and on-base ability, you know, stolen base ability.
Yeah.
I felt like he could have been taken and one of those guys that they give 10 grand to save some money. I'm surprised he wasn't taken at all. And then I didn't even think about this until somebody asked me about it. Joseph Gonzalez was not picked by a team and was not signed as a free agent.
Yeah.
And this is a guy that going into 2023, so after he came off his sophomore year, we were talking about where in the draft he would go after a strong junior year. He pitched that one game, was out for the rest of the year, came back, and then last year was essentially a disaster.
Yeah.
And so,
I mean, did they just get scared?
I think it's something he was already kind of seen as a guy that physically was kind of maxed out. You weren't going to get a lot of development as far as improving his velocity and things like that. It was just going to be, can you polish him into a back-end sinker slider guy? He was never going to be a super high pick, but I'm guessing the injuries and the poor performance when he came back had him completely fall off the radar. It just blows my mind he wasn't even signed as a free agent.
Yeah, right? Well, I mean, which is understandable from the injury, bad performance side. But yeah, even as a free agent, I mean, take the risk. Take the chance on him getting back to what he used to be. Because at his peak, I mean, look, Gonzo was one of the best pitchers in the SEC. I mean, this guy was elite at his peak, but the fear is, I mean, and I hate to say this, but the fear is he may never get back to that.
Yeah, that is, it's something where I can understand why you would prioritize other pitchers
right.
when you have limited space in your farm system. Because the way, with them contracting the size of the minor leagues and lowering the reserve list, you have less minor league spots even this year than you had last year. So every guy you sign as an undrafted free agent, somebody in your current farm system has to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've noticed a trend now of a lot of teams, some of them are signing a ton. The Chicago White Sox had like 9 or 10 UDFAs. But for the most part, a lot of teams, when they used to sign 8 or 10 guys, are signing 3 or 4. And it's simply because they don't have the room in their farm system to add a bunch of guys because you're restricted to only 165, whereas it used to be 195.
That's a big difference.
Yeah. And so, like, we see it in some of the older veterans, the 29, 30-year-old guy in AAA is getting squeezed out.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing it in the major league veterans who are trying to get a minor league deal to catch back onto teams, and they're getting squeezed out. And now we're seeing it on undrafted free agents. If you don't get drafted, you know, it's a lot harder because there's now only 120, 150 undrafted free agent spots instead of 300.
That's wild. What I was going to say, to go back to the recruits that were drafted, because for those of you that don't know, Lindsay's explained this a couple of times on here, and it's really, really interesting. The fact that, yeah, high school recruits, if you're good enough, you can have a commitment and a scholarship offer to a D1 program or
any
program. And NIL, but you can also be drafted in Major League Baseball and basically choose which way you want to go.
Yep.
And for Auburn's sake right now, if that does stick to be true with all of those guys who were drafted actually going to end up here on the Plains, what a huge addition and bonus for Butch Thompson in this program, because we've seen it in the past that Auburn's had some really high-level guys who got drafted and never even made it to Auburn.
Yeah, Gunnar Henderson, who is leading the American League in homers right now. He was an Auburn commit out of Selma and just never made it to campus. Right now, Colt Emerson, Kevin McGonigal, two middle infielders from last year's class, both drafted in the first round. Emerson's a top 100 prospect in MLB already. McGonigal just got promoted to high A yesterday. I mean, they're both seen as, again, Emerson's top 100. McGonigal's not far off of the top 100.
Mm-hmm.
And these are guys, like, Auburn had to go out and get multiple infielders last year out of the portal because they lost these guys who didn't make it to campus. So getting these guys on campus is big. And the next big area has become schools using NIL to keep players out of the MLB draft. And
can NIL compete with the money they make in Major League Baseball?
So for most schools, it can't. We saw an announcement from what was considered to be the number two prep in the class, pitcher William Schmidt, like 2 hours before the draft, that he was going to LSU. He was not coming. He was not coming or not being drafted in the draft. Connor Griffin, the shortstop and center fielder who was also committed to LSU, he was drafted number 9 overall. And people that I talked to told me that LSU was telling these players, was told the two of them, that we can match any bonus inside the top 10.
Holy smokes.
Now, granted, that's going to be over 4 years.
Right.
You, but we can match any bonus inside the top 10 if you come to campus, but we only have money for one of you. Because they didn't have the luck they wanted in the portal of getting the guys they wanted in the portal. And so reportedly, according to the sources that I have, they went to these players and said, we can match any bonus you get inside the top 10.
First come, first serve.
First come, first serve.
Wow.
The pitcher took it. The position player didn't. For reference, the number 10 pick in the draft, the slot value is $5.95 million. So they are in essence saying we could get you $6 million over 4 years if you come to campus.
I'll show my lack of knowledge in terms of NIL baseball money around college, but I assume that LSU is probably up there. Even before hearing that, I would have told you that LSU is probably one of the higher schools in the country in terms of NIL money for baseball.
Yes, LSU is one of the highest, and those dollar amounts are higher than a lot of the others I have ever heard.
That's a lot of money, man.
Those are some of the highest NIL amounts that I have heard for college baseball.
Those are football numbers at some schools.
Those are football numbers at a lot of schools. Not everybody in the SEC is paying that. I don't know for a fact what a lot of schools are paying, but I do kind of know what the going rate is for like an SEC starting pitcher and things like that. And that nothing is nearly as high as
that's
top
crazy.
10 picks in the. I've heard some schools saying we can, if you're drafted outside the top 5 rounds, we can match that money, right?
Yeah, but not top 10
not
in the
top
draft.
Not top 10 picks, yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, and so one of the sources I had on that said it was top 5 picks, but everybody else said top 10, so I'm being conservative on this one and saying top 10. But it's just, that's where NIL is right now, and college programs that have the money can really stock up on talent when it used to be harder to get these guys to campus because it was the promise of we can get you drafted higher in 3 years than you would be drafted this time. Now you can pay them and then get them drafted higher.
That's about the only argument they have left, right, Lindsay? I mean, that's about all they have because I always try to put myself in the shoes of these athletes. You're a 18-year-old kid, 17-year-old, however old they are, right? Let's say 18 just for argument's sake.
Yeah.
And you're committed to play at Auburn. But you're also drafted, let's just say the first round, okay? You're going to make a couple mil. You're going to be playing Major League Baseball very soon. You'll work your way up through their minor league system very quickly, and you will be playing Major League Baseball. Or you can go make okay money, also go to school, go to college, which, again, is not for everybody, right? And not everybody wants to go to class every day and go through college practice and play college ball when you could jump that step and go straight to the majors.
Yeah, and it's a different calculus for everybody. Some of the players like the idea of being able to come to college and play for something.
Well, some kids have the dream of doing that.
With better quality of life. Some players want to go ahead and get started in pro ball because the sooner they can get into pro ball, the sooner they can get to the majors. And it's like, if I spend 4 years in the minors out of high school, I'm still in the majors faster than spending 3 years in college and then 2 years in the minors to debut.
Right.
So they're betting on themselves. But with NIL, it's a lot easier for colleges to get players to come to campus. This draft had the highest percentage of college players taken in the last decade. Now, some of that was the prep class wasn't that great.
Mm-hmm.
These kids were all freshmen in 2020 and just they've missed some time and development and all that. But a lot of it, too, was NIL. And now it is so much harder to buy a college kid out of their commitment. You used to see in the 20 rounds of the draft, you would see 6 preps taken, right? A team would take 6 preps and they'd take 14 college players and they'd get 5 of the 6 to sign.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're seeing them take 4 preps or 3 preps because they have to spend more money per prep player to get them to go pro.
They're bidding
versus
on them,
going
man.
To. In essence, that's what they're doing. Wow. Yeah, it's all about the money.
That's. I say that on this show just about every day in whatever conversation we're having. It's all about the money. Before we get to our final break, I did see some pictures earlier today from Jason Caldwell at Auburn Undercover on the updates over at Plainsman Park. Those are. I mean, they're putting it. You and I talked about this the last time you were in here. It's been a couple of weeks since we were in Dallas last week. They're making some moves over there. They're putting some serious work in over at Plainsman Park, and the updated photos, man, it looks really, really good.
Yeah, they're going to have, again, a giant structure all the way down the first baseline, all the way down to the foul pole, right? Whereas it used to stop right around the corner, right after you got out of the press box and everything like that. There's going to be enclosed spaces, premium spaces, a new press box, all kind of great quality of life improvements, as well as some stuff for the players, too. Like, it's not going to be just for fans, but this is phase one. They've got a phase two planned on top of the hitting lab. They've got phase three planned on top of the monster. They've got a ton of stuff coming, and it's really exciting to kind of see what they're going to end up being able to do.
Yeah, I'm pumped to see it when it's finally done. It'll be a few more years, but I'm pumped to see what that's going to look like over at Plainsman Park. We'll take our final break here in hour number one. We'll get Lindsay's favorite moment from the All-Star game when we come back as we wrap up our Baseball Power Hour after this here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Got a few more minutes here in our Baseball Power Hour. We do this every week, typically on Tuesdays, and we'll do this as we get through the rest of July into August, closer to the postseason, which in terms of that really quick, Lindsay, the Braves are the, and correct me if I'm wrong, the first wild card team as of right now. They are 54-45 in terms of their record. They've got a couple of games buffer there, so they're trying to make some moves. They just can't catch up to Philly right now.
No, they one, the health issue has been a thing, and then they're still struggling offensively ever since they've come back. They're on a three-game losing streak right now, and they have a three-game lead in the wild card over the next team, which I believe is the Cardinals. The Cardinals have a half are a half game ahead of the third spot, so the Braves are 3.5 games out of the final wild card spot, but in a good way, not in a bad way. It's just they can't seem to catch breaks, right? Like, Austin Riley got a little bit hot before the All-Star break. Now he's out for at least no more than three games. You can't miss more than three games, but he's out for paternity leave. Olsen, like we said, has been bad. Ozzie's now hurt. And the flip side of this is at least you have an explanation for if the streak of division titles ends this year. You can point to the injuries and say, well, it's kind of obvious what happened, right? Like,
sure.
No, we didn't hit that well. But also, yes, we, you know, like, think about Philly right now. If they lost, Zach Wheeler and, if they had all the injuries that Atlanta's had, they wouldn't be doing nearly as good.
Oh, Philly would be terrible. Yeah.
The Braves have already lost 300 games of roster time from guys that played last year.
Wow.
They're going to lose at least another 250 when you factor in Ronald being out for the whole year, however much time Freed misses, Ozuna being out. Like, they're going to miss a whole... It's just... It's insane. And to think that they are... Like, okay, I thought about it real quick. Here's the equivalent. If the Phillies lost Zach Wheeler and Bryce Harper for the whole season, if they didn't have JT Realmuto and Trey Turner for 2 months, and then lost Aaron Nola and Bryson Stott in the middle of the season indefinitely... Do you think they'd be that good? Like,
that team would be below 500.
That's the equivalent of Atlanta right now. The fact that they are as good as they are, I think, is a miracle just about.
Yeah,
right?
I'm with you on that. I really am. I'm with you on that.
I mean, they're 9 games above 500 in July with this offense and these injuries.
It's
and
crazy, man.
Now, the issue here is the pitching has to keep doing what it's doing. Ronaldo Lopez has had 2 bad starts in a row now. I mean, not awful. He had 4 runs last night, but the most runs he's given up in a start all year.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, what happens now if the pitching takes a step back? Because the pitching was going into the All-Star break, the Braves had the best pitching ERA in baseball. Number one in ERA as a staff in baseball entering the All-Star break. What happens if that takes 1 step back or 2 steps back with the offense they have, with the injuries they have? What happens then?
Well, before we leave, or before you leave, I have another hour. But before you leave, want to get your favorite moment from the All-Star game. What was that? That was a week ago today, right? A week ago when the All-Star game took place. It got about 2 minutes. What was your favorite moment from the All-Star game?
Honestly, it has to be Paul Skeens in the first inning, right? I mean, it has to be Paul Skeens going up there, getting Gunnar Henderson. And people had some criticism before the game. I was listening to the press conference about Juan Soto batting third and Aaron Judge batting fourth. Because everybody was saying, we want to see Skeens take on Soto and Judge.
Sure.
And what did Juan Soto say? He said, I promise you, Aaron Judge will get a chance to bat. And what happened?
And he did.
Juan Soto draws a walk. Aaron Judge comes up to bat. And honestly, Judge did not have a great at-bat. He swung on the first pitch, grounded out softly, in and over. But just getting to watch that matchup, that was cool. Honestly, I didn't watch the whole All-Star game. I made sure that I was in front of the TV in time to catch the first inning.
I wonder how the views looked like this, and I'm just angling my hand down right
now. From what I understand, it was a downward trend in the All-Star game, yes. But the viewership peaked in the first inning because people wanted to watch Paul Skeens.
Shohei went deep. That was awesome.
Shohei went deep. Jaron Duran went deep later on, won MVP.
That's my man. That's my boy.
I'm glad to see him finally break out after some rough couple years. My fantasy league, my home fantasy league, he's been owned by at least seven different teams.
Wow.
Everybody thought he was going to break out, and they moved him on, and he finally broke out after all this time.
Yeah, he's raking, man. He's doing good things up there in the East. Hey, man, plug everything one more time before you get out of here.
I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. You can find all of the writing, bravestoday.com. AuburnDaily.com, and then AthlonSports.com for everything else.
Awesome, man. Lindsey Crosby joining us in the studio for all of hour number one. Always great to see you, my friend. Appreciate your time, as always.
Thanks for having me.
That's hour number one in the book. Stick around. We'll have Daryl Dapperich will be joining us in hour number two around 3:15. We'll get him on the phone lines. Got some SEC and Auburn things to talk about before we get to him as well. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on ESPN 106.7. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go and catch up with the podcast after the show today. You'll find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. That is where you can find the podcast. You can also listen to the show live every day there. If you are unable to be driving around in your vehicle to listen on ESPN 106.7 FM, again, you can always go to ESPNAU.com. In hour number one, it is Tuesday, which means we had Lindsey Crosby join us for our baseball power hour, man. Always a lot of fun getting him in the studio. And it's the one time during the week that we lock down and just talk pure baseball for an hour. So if that's your thing, if that's your mojo, that's the type of radio that you want to listen to, be sure you go back and listen to the podcast. You can find it at ESPNAU.com. Talked about the Braves and all of the injury problems that they are having, plus how they are trying to get it figured out even with the injury problems. And when Lindsey was on his way out of the studio during break, he said the Braves are having a team meeting right now. So who knows what that could be about? Maybe they're trying to get it together a little bit as they are trying to stay in the wild card hunt and hunt down the Phillies to extend their streak of being division champs. And so talked about that. Also talked about Auburn guys who got drafted into Major League Baseball. So a lot of good talk in that first hour. So if you missed it, go catch catch up with the podcast later on today. Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we'll have Daryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn. He'll join us on the phone lines as he does every Tuesday here on the show. We'll have him for 30 minutes. We will do a little recap of SEC Media Days a week ago, preview Big Cat Weekend coming up this weekend, and talk about some other SEC football news as well. So that's coming up in about 10 minutes. Until then, phone lines are open. You can give me a call. What's on your mind on this Tuesday afternoon? You can be a part of the show and be on the line. 334-321-1390. Haven't heard from you guys in a while, so I've been out of town and in Dallas and all sorts of things. July has been a crazy month, and so got to get you guys back in the routine. So 334-321-1390. You can also shoot me a text if you want to get your questions and thoughts in that way. That number is 334-784-1067. A reminder that hour number two, each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN, is brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing the second hour of our show each and every day to you here on ESPN. I saw a headline the other day, and it was from Josh Pate, who is with Late Kick, who a part of 247. He does a bunch of stuff. If you're a college football person, you know who Josh Pate is. And he played my favorite game. He posed a question that I love asking all the time. He played the what-if game. And so I had to bite. I had to jump on it. I had to bring it up on the show. We got a few minutes before we take an early break and get to Double D. And the question is, what if Peyton Thorne has a career year this season? Now, he's got a video. He's got a whole bunch of his thoughts on there. I didn't even listen to it. No disrespect to him. I just didn't get a chance to listen to it. But the question itself is really fascinating to me. Because we've told you, and I've told you about the fact that, look, Peyton Thorne this year, we know that he is Hugh Freeze's guy. We know that Freeze didn't go get anybody in the portal, and it's a bunch of young guys behind him. He's got all the talent in the world around him, and he has all the pieces in place to have a successful season. But it's been a little bit since we have gone back and looked at what Peyton Thorne used to be, right? His days at Michigan State were a little up and down. The ups and the highs were incredible. Michigan State was a number three team in the country. They were surging towards postseason play in a college football playoff before ultimately getting smacked by Ohio State. But he had Heisman-like numbers at Michigan State. Now, he had an offensive line that was very good, had an elite running back around him, or behind him, I should say, and wide receivers around him that were just pure playmakers. That was a good Michigan State team in the year that he was solid. Now, the year after that, when he lost that running back and he lost some of his talent around him, it was more of a back-to-earth type of season. And then he came to Auburn, and last year when he got here after the spring, okay, got to remind you of that, after the spring, came in, started okay, middle of the year was shaky, and down the stretch was not so good. But now with all of those pieces that I've been telling you about and that everybody's been talking about, the offensive line, the wide receivers, the tight ends, the running backs, the coaching, the play calling, the communication that he talked about last week at SEC Media Days, all of that coming together, and we ask the question, what if Peyton Thorne has a career year this season? And eventually I'll go back and hear what Josh Pate has to say because I always enjoy listening to him. He's got some interesting thoughts, in my opinion. But it is a really fun question. It's my favorite game, the what if. Because what if Peyton Thorne has a career year this season? Well, if that's the case, then Auburn is going to have a really awesome season. Auburn's going to have a fun season. And I'll just flat out give it to you. If Peyton Thorne has a career year where he puts up the best numbers he's ever put up in his entire existence in college football, then Auburn is a playoff team. That's how I feel. If Peyton Thorne can come out and just light it up. Light it up with all the fancy receivers and everything he's got around him, then Auburn is a borderline playoff team. I want you to look back at 2021 when he was at Michigan State. That's the year that everybody goes back to. That's the Heisman-like numbers where Michigan State was a really, really good football team. 2021, Peyton Thorne had a 60% completion percentage, threw for 3,200 yards, 27 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions. His quarterback rating was 148. Let me say those numbers again. He was a 60% passer with 3,200 yards, 27 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions. If he has a career-like year, which means better than that, so what, 65% completion percentage? 3,700 yards, which is absurd. 30 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 5 interceptions, 32 touchdowns, I don't know. But if he can do better than that with the schedule that Auburn has, tell me how they're not a playoff team. But here's where I am going to take a little detour and step aside to this question. And I'm going to answer it in a different way. And I believe that I alluded to this last week when we were in Dallas at SEC Media Days. Auburn doesn't have to have a career year from Peyton Thorne. That's what's exciting about this. That's what should be a little less stressful for the senior quarterback. For a guy that's going into his fifth year of college football. He doesn't have to have a career year. The potential's there, sure. And he has the weapons to have a really good season, but that's all you need is a really good season. Man, because here's what he did last year. Let me remind you of his numbers from Auburn last year. 61%, 1,700 yards, 16 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions. So let's try to average out from 2021 and 2023. 2021 at Michigan State, 2023 a year ago at Auburn. All right, 60% completion percentage. That's fine. He was 60 at Michigan State, 61 at Auburn. 60% is fine with me. He went from 27 touchdowns to 16. Okay, give me 22. Give me 22 touchdowns. And he did throw 10 interceptions in both of those years. And even the gap year, or not the gap year, but the middle year in there too, with Michigan State in 22, the year that he, you know, took a step back, he also threw double-digit interceptions. And so that seems to be the category that we've got to get fixed with Peyton Thorne. You can throw 20 touchdowns this year. That's fine by me. But let's keep the interceptions in single digits. Let's get the bad interceptions out of the film, out of the record. Let's get those out of our game. And I think Auburn's going to be in a good spot. And so you can play around with the question, what if Peyton Thorne has the best football year of his life? What would Auburn be after that? And I think the sky's the limit. But give me a 60% completion percentage. Give me, I don't know, 2,500 yards. Give me 20 to 23 touchdowns and 7 to 9 interceptions. We got to be realistic. Of course, we'd all love to say 0 interceptions, but give me a break. You see what I'm saying here? If he has a good year, a solid year, an above average season, Auburn can be a really dangerous football team this fall. And that's a question we're going to continue to talk about and continue to answer even when the season begins. Because if he gets off to a bumpy start, the question will be, can he turn it around? If he gets off to a good start, the question will be, can he keep it going when the competition gets tougher? And those are questions that I anticipate getting answers to very early and very often, and that will continue to come up throughout the entire football season. All right, let's get to break. We got to get to Daryl Dappert. He's going to join us on the phone lines coming up in just a few minutes. Double D from Lockdown Auburn will be with us here when we come back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. ¶¶
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Let's get to the phone lines here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, and it's not a caller, it's a guest joining us, as he does every Tuesday at this time. It's Double D, Daryl Dapprich from Locked On Auburn. What's up, my man? How you doing on this Tuesday?
I am doing well, my friend. Enjoyed hanging out with you last week at SEC Media Days, and now just kind of get back in the swing of things, I guess.
Yeah, have you caught up on sleep? I mean, Media Days is such a fun week, but there's a lot happening. We're not all just out there having fun and talking to coach. I mean, there's a lot of stress that goes into that week, and then traveling back. I mean, I know you were telling me that you just missed all the craziness over there in Hot Atlanta.
Yeah, you know, listen, I'm blessed to go to Media Days. I love it. It's exciting, but it's not like a relaxing vacation. I mean, you're up early, you're hustling, you're trying to talk to coaches, you're going to press conferences, you're doing your own shows and podcasts and then going on other people's. So it is very, very high paced. It's fun. We're blessed to do it. And then I got into Atlanta late Thursday night coming back from Dallas because of some weather. It was in the Atlanta earlier in the day, but my goodness, I can't complain. When I woke up that next morning, I was on a show in Mobile on WNSP down in Mobile, and they had me on, and they're like, well, it was real early in the morning, and they're like, I guess you missed all the computer craziness and all the delayed flights. And I'm like, what? You know, so I was lucky. And so, just catching up, trying to get back in the swing of things, and all that means when we get back from SEC Media Days is that much closer to kickoff, so there we go. We're that much closer.
Well, we are 39 days away from the start of Auburn football, even sooner than that, from the start of college football as a whole. And so if you had to kind of recap SEC Media Days the best that you could, Daryl, from coaches and players, even Greg Sankey, and I mean, everything that happened a week ago, your biggest takeaways maybe is a better way to put that from Dallas last week.
Biggest takeaway from the overall conference perspective, and not specifically Auburn related, would be, the buzz about 16 strong and the constant trying to get Sankey to say there would be more expansion, and he wouldn't budge. I think the Texas-Oklahoma contingency, Sark and Venables said all the right things about the schools coming in and being humble to be in this conference. And, you know, I the perception I got from a lot of the media there, though, and the fan base is SEC's lucky to have us. There is an extreme amount of arrogance that runs rampant, even through some of the media folks out there that feel like football was invented in Texas and Oklahoma, and the conference is lucky to get them, to the point where, you know, this Red River rivalry crap kept coming out there, talking about how that, you know, I heard somebody say, well, now you're getting one of the best rivalries in college football. And I'm thinking, you've got the best rivalry in college football already in the conference. And, you know, it's just this arrogance of it's going to be at a different level. Will it be enhanced? Absolutely. But I've said it before, and I'll say it again, the conference was great before those two came in. They would be great in the best conference in the world, even if they had not come in. So this whole attitude from the media and the fan base is what, you know, just was laughable. And some of the ESPN personalities trying to say they've been to the Iron Bowl and they've been to the Red River rivalry, and it's, you know, the Red River rivalry is better. I mean, I get it. You're at a state fair. Maybe that enhances it because there's rides and carnival rides and you can eat a freaking corn dog and have cotton candy. But that's not what football and rivalries are about. It's not about the extenuating circumstance. If it was about that, then the Tiger Walk or the Eagle Flying, or that would mean that the rivalry is the best. It's not. It's about the football. It's about being in state, having to go to church, work, school with fans from the different marriage, with fans from the different fan base. And Oklahoma and Texas will not get to that level. And I don't care. I get it. It's an event. Wonderful. So is the world's largest outdoor cocktail party as an event, right? I mean, so I don't know. This whole argument that it's at the state fair, great. Let's go play it at the Montgomery Fairgrounds then, the Iron Bowl, and see if that enhances it. I don't get it. But that's the biggest takeaway. From an Auburn standpoint, Hugh Freeze came into this, I felt like, a lot different than he did last year. A lot more confident, a lot more sure, a lot more just like he's got something that he knows up his sleeve about this football team. Not arrogant, not cocky, just a lot different, with an acknowledgement of him just being very, very sure of himself and this football team. There seems like there's something that, you know, he's got under his sleeve. It's the only way to describe it.
Get after him, Daryl. Let them know over there in Norman and in Austin that they're coming into the SEC, man. You're fired up today. I absolutely love it, because
you equate rivalry with emotion and hate?
Yeah.
That's me. Okay, so if that's the precursor, I'm going to make the argument, and get ready for these fans that have never seen it before. Texas A&M, in my mind, is more of a heated rivalry than Texas-Oklahoma because of the oil money, Texas, big boosters, cowboy hats, going after the same players. That rivalry, having not played for a while, ducking each other, that rivalry amongst those fan bases, to me, is more hated and heated than Oklahoma, Texas. And to me, that's the number one ingredient in a rivalry, is emotion and hatred.
Well, my question, and I should have asked this while we were there at Media Days, when we had a bunch of Oklahoma and Texas people right there around us, and shame on me for not asking it, but do they, and look, and they're going to tell you, Oklahoma and Texas fans will tell you that they hate each other and that they can't stand each other, but my question is, do they hate each other 365 days a year? Do they think about the other one when they get up in the morning, as they're driving to work, when they're at lunch? Are they reading articles about the other one? Do they listen to radio shows to get insight on the other one? Do they constantly hate the other team? I just don't get that vibe, Daryl.
I don't either. And I think that's the issue, is if you are living in Austin, Texas, and you lose to Oklahoma, and you go back to work on Monday morning in Austin, Texas, is some idiot in a cubicle next to you going to, you know, decorate your cubicle in Oklahoma stuff? No. Or at church Sunday morning when you have to duck in the pews and down the aisle and not go to Sunday school because there's that big Bama fan in Sunday school who's going to see you and say something about it. You know, again, or this license plate, the house divided. God bless people that do it. My wife's a Braves fan. I'm a Pirates fan. We were dating when Sid Bream slid across home plate. Ooh. We almost didn't make it to the altar because she got up and tomahawk chopped me. And that's not even close to an altar. Could you imagine, sounding like Zach now, could you imagine sitting at an Iron Bowl with your wife and you're watching the game? And she's diehard Alabama, and you're diehard. How do you get over that?
I don't see how people do it.
God bless them. Probably because they don't take it, because they have a healthy perspective on life and football, and they're not as crazy as me, where a Disney World vacation was ruined because of 4th and 31. But I just think that's you don't have to face that, and until you do, you can't put it on the same level. I'm sorry. You can't. I know Oklahoma and Texas recruit some of the same players. I get that. But they're not in-state. And I think in-state and hatred and emotion are the components to make a right. They have to be the criteria before anything else.
Most people know this that listen to this program and know me outside of the studio. I grew up in Ohio for most of my time, but I was born and raised an Auburn fan. I'm from the state of Alabama. All my family's down here. And Auburn was always it for me. And people in Ohio, Daryl, they never believed me, and they laughed and they were calling me crazy when I was growing up and saying that I would never, ever marry an Alabama fan. And look, now I've grown up and it's a little different now, but growing up was that way. And that was what a rivalry was all about. People just didn't understand it. And so I get exactly what you're saying. Do you believe that Texas and Oklahoma fans and media may be humbled a little bit the first time one of those teams gets beat by an SEC team? It could be Oklahoma losing to Auburn. Could be Texas when they get beat by Georgia. I mean, what do you think that's going to happen at all?
I think reality is going to set in about halfway through the year. I think week in, week out, you know, in the Big 12, you may get a tough opponent. but then you can come back with when Kansas wasn't very good, or you know, Iowa State wasn't very good. You get breather games in the Big 12. Sorry, you do.
Yeah,
and in the SEC, you really don't. So I think reality will set in about halfway through the year, when even if Texas, you know, has played really, really good football, and they're looking and they're like, we've already got a loss, or we've already got two losses. This didn't happen to us in the Big 12. Or Oklahoma's got two or three losses sitting there, game number seven, game number eight. That's when reality will set in because of the gauntlet of the schedule that, you know, they have to play. It's just you take a week off in the SEC, and other than playing, and I don't mean this disrespectful, but other than playing maybe Vanderbilt, you can get beat, period. And so this year with 16 teams, and I would predict right now that 12 of the 16 teams, maybe even 13 of the 16 teams, will go to a bowl game or the playoff. Right? Let's just yeah. I mean, it's different. Either the play, I think the SEC is going to get three or four in the playoff, and they're going to get eight more teams that go to bowls. Maybe two or three of those NY six bowls. So you can't even imagine what that's like in another conference. Now, the Pac-2 may have all of its components, all of its teams in the bowl game, but that's not really hard to do when you have to go 2 of 2.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think that's where it's – they'll know. They'll know about game eight. They're going to be like, whoa, you know, but they were okay with that because of the 12-team playoff, and you're never going to convince me. I don't care what anybody says. It's just my opinion. If this playoff stayed at four, I do not think they would have been as anxious to jump into the SEC.
Really? Okay. Yeah. That's an intriguing argument. I like that.
Yeah, I don't think they would have. I think they'd have liked to stay in the Big 12 where they'd have got that automatic bid.
Yeah.
If they won the Big 12. I think, you know, if it stayed at four, I don't know. Think about it. Think about if there were 16 teams in the SEC and the playoffs were four. there'd be three teams or four teams that win 10 games. And two of them would not get in.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
That's why I don't think they would have been as excited. I just don't think they would have jumped in if they didn't think there was a 12-team playoff coming down the pipe.
I like that. I like that take, Darryl. And I think you're absolutely right on that. Well, we'll find out what happens with Texas and Oklahoma as we are 39 days away from the start of SEC football. Darryl Dappert's joining us on the phone lines from Locked On Auburn. We're going to talk some Auburn basketball when we come back because we got some updates last week while we were at SEC Media Days. And we need to catch up on what's going on with Bruce Pearl and the Tigers. That's coming up next. We got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, and we're joined on the phone lines for another segment from Darryl Dappert, Double D. You can catch him a couple of days a week on the Locked On Auburn podcast. Darryl, appreciate you hanging around with us. We'll make an announcement at the end of our segment here about our time together. It's a fine announcement, nothing good, nothing bad, just a little bit of a change. So we'll get to that in just a little bit. But wanted to talk a little bit of Auburn basketball because it's been a little bit since we've had a chance to talk about Bruce Pearl and the Tigers, and he said a while back, believe it was back in May, Darryl, that Auburn was going to play one of the toughest non-conference schedules in the country, and the addition of Purdue definitely makes that so.
Absolutely. It's interesting. Had the opportunity, was blessed to go to the Ambush event in Dallas, Texas, while we were out at SEC Media Days,
yes.
Dallas-Fort Worth, Auburn Club. Had an event, like a fundraiser. Andy Burcham was there and a variety of Auburn coaches as well as athletic director John Cohen. And I just really appreciated. We got about a half hour with some coaches in
yes,
a little private media. And the question I asked, you know, you were there sitting right next to me, and the question I asked Bruce Pearl was about the non-conference schedule. And he made an excellent point that this isn't anything new. He's tried to do this for years. It's just that last year Notre Dame fizzled, USC fizzled, Indiana didn't have as good a year.
Yeah.
Well, Indiana started playing good late. It's a good thing that Auburn didn't catch Indiana in February or March. I'll tell you that much. Woodson got them turned around. as the Locked On Indiana guy would know. So I just think that, you know, there was he makes a great point that just some things did not – some NCAA tournament teams from 2022 underachieved last year. And Hugh Freeze interrupted him and said, yeah, but you've gone overboard this year. He's right. Yeah. I mean – And look, we know there's two more announcements coming probably.
Mm-hmm.
The Hoopsgiving thing in Atlanta, they're looking at a Big Ten opponent, and they're looking at another national, kind of powerhouse for the first week of November that hasn't been announced yet.
Right.
When those two get announced to pair up with Duke and Purdue, and I think they're in Maui for that, it's just going to be brutal. But he's got the roster. If you're going to play it, this is the year to play it. And you don't have to go win every one of these games. That's the thing people need to understand from a basketball perspective is let's say you play five really, really tough non-conference opponents outside of the Maui Classic, and you even go 2-3. If you go 3-2, you're at the end of the year, it could make the difference between a number 4 seed line or a 3 seed line or 3-2. And, you know, Auburn may have more losses going into the NCAA tournament next year that they did this year, but they may be ranked higher from a perspective of slotting in the NCAA tournament because of this schedule. So that's what fans need to keep in mind when that schedule gets released and when Auburn plays that schedule. It'll be a lot of fun, but Auburn should be not intimidated by anybody on that schedule because of the roster that they will have.
Well, here's what I've brought up a few times in the past, and you alluded to it a little bit right there. In college basketball, with the NCAA tournament, right, with the tournament committee, the folks that sit, you know, it's like the playoff committee, they sit in a room and they do their thing and don't tell anybody why they did it. You get credit for playing big-time non-conference games. But unfortunately, and you know this, Darryl, you don't get credit for playing those games at home. You've got to play them neutral site or on the road, which is good about playing Duke in the SEC-ACC Challenge. You're going to be at Cameron Indoor with this Purdue series. You're playing one in Birmingham. You'll play up in Indianapolis next season. The Holiday Hoopsgiving that Auburn has played in the past. They played Indiana a year ago. That's in Atlanta. So Auburn is not only getting these non-conference games, but they're getting them outside of Neville Arena, which from a fan perspective, I know it just sucks. I know that. It does. But if you're Bruce Pearl in Auburn, you've got to look at it from the perspective of, man, we have to play our easier games at home because welcoming in Purdue doesn't do us any good.
No, that's a shame. It used to. It used to, in the eyes of the committee, if you just played anybody that was a top 20, you could have played them in a garage and they were going to give you extra credit or extra looks for the NCAA tournament. Now,
absolutely.
If it's got to be on a neutral floor or it's got to be on the road. And a road loss to a top 10 team, in my opinion, is more valuable than a home win to a top 20 team. That's how, and think about this. You can lose a third of your games in college basketball and still get a nice seed in the NCAA tournament. You lose a third of your games on a 12-game schedule in college football, you're done. You'll go to a bowl game, but you ain't playing for a championship.
Right.
So that's where the perspective, it drives me crazy when we do these post-game shows and people act like the world has ended because Auburn loses a basketball game or loses two in a row. Oh, that's it. Season's done. We're screwed. And you're like, no, get hot in the SEC tournament like Auburn did, or, you know, play really, really good teams. So when the NCAA tournament comes around, you're absolutely suited to play those games. And again, with a senior laden roster, This is the time to do it. The experience that's on this roster, the talent that's on this roster, the depth, that's where you go on the road. Depth is a big thing, especially if officials get the officials get whistle happy. If TV Teddy's calling the game or somebody else, you're on the road and you're getting whistled, you got to have some depth, foul trouble, that kind of thing. So I think it's a good move. Is it a little bit overkill if the two that I've heard they may add, they add?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Buckle up.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, I think that Auburn's gotten to the point now under the Bruce Pearl era that they're considered one of the premier basketball programs in the country. And that's what premier basketball teams do. They play this kind of schedule.
I look at it this way, Double D. I look at it this way because fans, and I used to be one of these before I started to understand how non-conference college basketball works. And I'm not saying fans don't. I'm just saying I started to gain a different perspective. That's a better way to say that. I started to gain a different perspective because fans, you got to it. They want to win every game, right? They want Auburn or whoever their team is. They want them to win every single game. But I use the example of Ole Miss last year, who played a horrific non-conference schedule. They were undefeated going into SEC play, and they were fool's gold. They were a terrible basketball team.
You could see that, yep.
You could see it when you watched them, and you found out the first 2 weeks of SEC conference play. I would rather have Auburn play this season like they already are, right? You've got Purdue on the schedule. You've got those games that a lot of us, again, know about but aren't public yet. And listen to this Maui Invitational draw that they have. They won't play all of these teams, but they'll play a combination of Colorado, Dayton, Iowa State, Memphis, Michigan State, North Carolina, and UConn on top of the road game that they're taking to Cameron Indoor Stadium to play the Duke Blue Devils. Like, I would much rather your team play some of those teams and even lose. That way they're battle-tested by the time January rolls around for conference play and March rolls around for the NCAA tournament, and I have a feeling you feel the same way.
Yes, the only way it backfires is if you lose all of them.
Well,
I don't think
fair.
That'll happen. But if you were to go into the Maui tournament and win your first game against a mid-opponent and then play somebody tough and get beat, and then you were to lose to Duke and you were to lose to this other school that were here rumors, and you were to lose to Purdue, you know, and you started, as they started stacking losses, then the argument would be, the narrative would be, well, when Auburn plays anybody that's ranked, then they get beat. That's where you don't want, you want to at least win a couple of them so that you could say, you could point to that as a huge quality win. Because if you lose all four or five, then the narrative is, well, once they play somebody out of conference that's, you know, really good, that's a tournament team, they get beat. I don't think that'll happen. I think Auburn will win its share in these games. And that's what you'd have to watch out for. That's where I think Hugh Freeze was joking with Bruce Pearl and said, yeah, but you went overboard this year. You killed your, and with the hopes that you don't go way too far and swing the pendulum in the other direction. You got to win a few of them. Even if you win two, if you go 2-4 in those six games, including the Maui Invitational, you're fine. You're fine. And then you go into conference play where you'll play ranked teams, especially with Texas and Oklahoma being in there now, and you'll play some ranked teams in conference that'll help getting that, you know, the RPI or whatever, not whatever it is now that they.
Well, you've got the net. It. You've got
the net, yeah, which I still haven't figured out how. Anyway, but yeah, all that, and so that'll and, you know, ironically, even though people complained about Auburn's schedule last year, what, they stayed in the top 10 in the net for most of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why that seeding seemed a little bit crazy when it came out. I thought Auburn was a little bit lower on the seed line than they should have been.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. We're talking about Daryl Dapperidge from Locked on Auburn. You can catch him on that podcast a couple of days a week with Zach Blackerby. He's doing some written work at Auburn Daily as well. You continue going back to the roster that Auburn basketball has, and we're doing a little bit of a deeper dive. It's the middle of the summer, but we haven't talked about him a whole lot here recently, and so you continue to allude to that roster that is senior heavy. I mean, you've got J.P. Pegues. You have Denver Jones, you have Jani Broome, you have Chad Baker Mazzara, you have Miles Kelly. Like, you have guys on that team, Darren Scott, Chaney Johnson, and Dylan Cardwell. Man, this is one of the oldest teams in college basketball, is it not?
It is. I think, you know, I don't know how much. I think Jaheim Hudson
yep,
might have a year left as well. I don't know. But then with all that experience, Pettiford and Ja'Kai Howard, people can't quit talking about them at practice. Stuff is leaking to us about how they're showing out at practice, and they're the two freshmen, and they don't write off Howard to get significant minutes at the three behind Kelly and Chad Baker Mazzara. You know, what do you do in that scenario? Do you slide Kelly to the two more? Listen, it's a nice problem to have, but this roster is a nice infusion. It's very, very, very senior heavy. But I think Howard and Pettiford are going to be able to provide an infusion of some youth and some excitement coming off the bench. I just have heard great things about both of them in practices by veterans that are there. So again, that speaks to the depth. It speaks to the depth. And if you get, because there's a couple of dudes on the Auburn basketball team, let's just be honest, that get in the game and within 15 minutes, they may have 6 points, eight rebounds, but they're going to have four fouls. It's just, you look up, you're like, how the heck do they have three fouls already? You got to be careful.
Yeah.
It's the defensive style that they play. Bruce's teams are very aggressive.
Very physical.
Off-ball defending. They're physical. They go for – if you go to the rim, they're going for the block, period. And so with that, draw some contact. I think the depth is important. You just wonder if by design last year, Bruce played 11 or 12 guys, even if there wasn't foul trouble. You wonder if he's going to shorten the bench a little bit this year and give minutes to 9 or 10, and then you go to 11 and 12 if you have to. But if that's the case, that means Howard and Pettit. I don't know. I think we're going to see more of the same from a distribution of minutes. But I do believe you got to let your Stallions play 26, 27 minutes. Your Brooms, your Pegues, your Kellys, I think those guys still have to eat at least 25 minutes a game or more, because they're going to be the ones, the core that carries you.
Well, and nowadays, right, in college basketball, I think it's tougher than any other sport. Like, you have to play guys a certain amount in the game, because if you don't, a guy like Ja'Kai Howard or a guy like Tahat Pettiford, they'll leave. They'll tell you to kick rocks and they'll go find a new program before the transfer portal even officially opens half the time. I mean, that's the battle that these coaches are in nowadays.
Except what you can sell this year if you're Bruce Pearl is if you tell Pettiford or Howard or anybody else that came in that maybe has 2 years left, look at this team and how senior laden it is. Just sit tight, bide your time for 1 year. You're going to be a huge part of the core next year when seven or eight dudes off this team are gone.
Yeah.
That's how you can sell it, is that you'll have a lot of playing time next year because this roster is going to be completely turned over. Bruce Pearl is going to go and probably sign three in the 2025 class. After next year, and then he'll have to go to the portal for three or four more because this roster is turning over so much. So, it'll be interesting to see how that plays. But, yeah, it's going to be a big roster reconstruction after next year.
Daryl Dapperich of Locked On Auburn. He joins us every Tuesday from 3:15 to 3:45-ish. But a little bit of news, Daryl. We're actually going to be changing days up a little bit. You're going to be joining us on Wednesdays now. Same time, but you'll be with us on Wednesday afternoons instead of Tuesday afternoons. That's correct?
Yeah, just spreading it out a little bit. I had some other things I do on Tuesday afternoons, and it just kind of butts up against it. And I want undivided attention and being able to spread it out throughout the week. So, yes, it'll be Wednesdays at 3:15. Starting next week, same thing, same amount of time, just one day later.
I love it. Well, hey, you're always just so gracious with your time, and we're always a pleasure to have you. And so, we're willing to make that change for you, my man. Don't you worry. So, yes, starting next week, we're going to have you on Wednesday at 3:15. And so until then, have a fantastic weekend, and we'll talk to you next Wednesday.
All right, brother. Take care.
That's Daryl Dapperich, Double D, joining us here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. And as he said, he's doing more hits now than ever before. He's doing the podcast. He's writing. He's got his actual full-time job, the thing that, pays the bills and things like that. And so, look, he's going to be with us on Wednesdays now, which means we're going to have a little bit of a change on our Tuesday shows, but really looking forward to what we're going to be able to do with this Tuesday, because Lindsey Crosby will continue joining us throughout the rest of baseball season as we get through the back half of the year. Hopefully we've got some postseason baseball to talk about, and then of course we'll pick back up with that once college baseball gets going again and all of that. But going to have a fun day on Tuesdays now with Daryl moving to Wednesdays. That's still going to be a stacked day, right? We still have Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 on there. Still working on getting another Alabama guy back on the show. We've had a couple of them rotate here in and out, and so still working on that, but Tuesday's show is going to get shaken up just a hair, but I promise you that we're going to make up for it. We'll take our final break here, come back, and wrap up the Tuesday edition of On the Line after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7.
online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Shout out to Daryl Dapperich joining us on the phone lines. Again, if you missed the announcement that we had, he's been with us on Tuesdays for quite some time. And it's funny because he started with us from 3:30 to 3:45, and then a while back, months and months ago, it may even been at the end of last year. You know, I had made a comment on the air, not meaning anything by it, but I just said, man, we always just have so much to talk about and always seem like we run out of time when me and Daryl were talking on the air. And he texted me after that one day, and he said, man, he said, I just have so much fun coming on, and you're right, we always have so much to talk about. I'm open for an extra 15 minutes to basically do two segments, 30 minutes with you on the air. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And so we've been doing that for quite some time, and that's always been on Tuesdays, but he's got a lot going on, and so we're going to move that to Wednesdays now. So Daryl Dapperich will be with us every Wednesday at 3:15 to 3:45. But I promise you that we're going to have a fill-in, a replacement, a makeup for that on Tuesdays, and you're going to be excited about that, so keep that in mind. That will be probably starting next Tuesday, so be sure that you're here for that. So we had Daryl in this second hour, also had Lindsey Crosby in the first hour, talking all things baseball with the Braves, had some Auburn baseball with the MLB draft, with the All-Star game, all that good stuff. So if you missed any of our conversations today, I had some quarterback talk with a what-if question on Peyton Thorne, and so if you missed any of that from today's show, you know where to find the podcast, ESPNAU.com. That's our station website. It's the easiest place to find it. And you can also listen to all the old shows there, and you can listen to the show live each and every day from the Max Roundtable to On the Line to The Drive, any of our live events, all that good stuff. Which, speaking of that, since we are here in the end of July, we got some baseball coming up this weekend. We have Yankees at Red Sox. That'll be Saturday and Sunday. Of course, Sunday will be Sunday Night Baseball. That'll get started at 5 o'clock right here on ESPN 106.7. So looking forward to that this weekend. Tomorrow is a show that you do not want to miss. Okay, we got Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. We'll get some more updates on Georgia as we get closer to fall practice beginning. And that's going to be a lot of the conversation with him tomorrow as we're coming out of SEC Media Days, what we can expect in fall practice from Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs. So we'll have that for you tomorrow. And then in hour number two, from 3 to 4, that's the time to tune in if you want some recruiting talk, because Christian Clemente of Auburn Undercover and Auburn 247 will be joining us live in studio. We're going to be previewing everything you need to know for Big Cat Weekend coming up on the Plains with Hugh Freeze and Auburn Football. So Christian Clemente is going to be in studio tomorrow, again, previewing Big Cat Weekend. He is the guy. I call him my recruiting guru, and I mean it. He will be with us tomorrow, 3 to 4 in the second hour. Jordan Hill in the first hour. Tomorrow's going to be a great show. All right, so you make sure you are here 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Again, thank you to our guests. Thank you to you for tuning in each and every day here on ESPN 106.7. 39 days from the start of Auburn football, even sooner than that, to the start of college football. Shout out to the Orthopedic Clinic for bringing you hour number 2 each and every day during On the Line here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Come back tomorrow, won't you? I'll be here 2 to 4 on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.